KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I live in Adams Point.
Castro Valley.
Hayward.
I live in Piedmont, California.
Unincorporated Alameda County.
Coming up, a former president comes to Oakland and speaks to young men of color.
We had to be able to say to them, you matter. We believe in you, and we are going to make sure that you have the opportunities and chances to move forward just like everybody else.
A recap of the My Brother's Keeper conference. Then we'll meet a woman who left the business world to tell stories of one of the greatest artworks in San Francisco.
All of the history and all of the people and how they lived and what they did is more important to me than selling a product.
Plus, more stories from listeners like you coming up today on Cross Currents. Stick around. Oakland educators went on strike today over classroom conditions and pay. The city's 3,000 teachers are demanding a 12% retroactive raise going back to 2017. They also want the district to hire more support staff.
Where did all the money go? Where did all the teachers go?
About 20 people picketed outside Westlake Middle School this morning. One was Malika Rubin Davis. She served as a drama teacher for 2 years. She's Bay Area born and raised and says she chose to teach in Oakland because she's passionate about the town, even though it meant taking a pay cut.
I personally am lucky to have other means, so like financially I'll be okay, but I know I'm out here because I know a lot of my colleagues and coworkers can't afford to live in Oakland. Like, lots of people either have roommates or commute for an hour or more to come to work because they can't afford to work where they live. So I'm here for myself, but also just to support Oakland teachers overall, because we need to be able to live in the community that we serve.
Oakland teachers have been working without a contract since 2017, and they've said their salaries have not kept up with the cost of living in the expensive San Francisco Bay Area. Here are some numbers. According to the Oakland Education Association, a teacher's average salary in the district is around $63,000. That's about $12,000 less per year than in neighboring Berkeley, according to the union. So where do things stand? Well, yesterday, the district offered a 7% raise over 4 years, plus a one-time 1.5% bonus. The union rejected that offer. And on its website, it's calling today's action strike day one. So while the immediate future for Oakland education is uncertain, this week, there was some cause for hope in other ways. Oakland played host to some special guests this week.
For those of you who don't know me, I'm Michelle's husband, Barack.
Former President Obama, along with celebrities, leaders, and hundreds of young men from around the country, traveled to Oakland for the My Brother's Keeper gathering. The organization's purpose is to help support and mentor young men of color and reduce youth violence. President Obama launched My Brother's Keeper in 2014. KALW's East Oakland reporter Janae Darden went to the first day of the event and is here with me to tell us all about it. Hey, Janae.
Hello.
All right, so a big event in Oakland.
Yeah, this is another big event in Oakland. Oakland is a hot spot right now. So last month, remember Senator Kamala Harris? She hosted a rally to kick off her run for president. And now this month, President Obama is hosting a conference. And actually, this is the first national My Brother's Keeper gathering.
Okay. And I hear there were some other big names in attendance.
Yes. John Legend interviewed the mothers of Trayvon Martin, Oscar Grant, and Jordan Davis. And you may recall, these are all young Black males who died by violence. The warrior Steph Curry was on stage with President Obama for a town hall meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Wakanda was in the house. Ryan Coogler and Michael B. Jordan spoke on the second day.
All right. So what exactly is My Brother's Keeper?
My Brother's Keeper is started as a White House initiative in 2014, mm-hmm. and it brought together community organizations, city governments, philanthropists, and President Obama challenged them to create policies and resources to help young men of color, you know, because of the hardships they face. Mm-hmm. And Oakland was one of the first cities to join the initiative. Mm-hmm. Now, at that time, the White House reported that nationally, only 14% of Black boys and 18% of Latino boys scored at or above a fourth grade reading level. And young men of color, you know, are also much more likely to be homicide victims and incarcerated. Mm-hmm. Now the initiative is a nonprofit under the Obama Foundation.
And so we know young men of color face challenges, like you just said, especially in Oakland.
Yeah, homicide is the leading cause of death in Oakland for 15 to 24-year-olds. And in fact, what inspired President Obama to launch the program was the murder of Trayvon Martin. And here's President Obama explaining.
Trayvon could have been my son. And the fact that not just Trayvon, but every single day, there were young men of color who were being shot and killed. We had to be able to say to them, you matter. And we are going to make sure that you have the opportunities and chances to move forward just like everybody else.
Okay, opportunities. So what kinds of opportunities are we talking about?
Well, My Brother's Keeper is funding local organizations like Urban Strategies Council in Oakland and the Rise Center in Richmond to provide mentorship, leadership, development, you know, community organizing, mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm.
So did you get to meet any of these young men in attendance?
I did. And Hannah, honestly, there were celebrities there, but the young men were the real stars. They were Black, Latino, Native, queer. I mean, they showed up. Mm. I heard there were kids there as young as 10.
Aww.
And they were dressed professionally and smiling and excited. Now, we weren't allowed in the breakout workshops, mm-hmm. but I saw the men, the young men outside networking and overheard them coming up with strategies for advocacy and uh-huh. creating changes in their communities.
Okay. So did President Obama give the young people some good advice then?
Well, one of his comments has caused some debate. During the town hall, he spoke about harmful and narrow definitions of masculinity,
okay.
What some people may call toxic masculinity. And yeah. he actually called out hip-hop culture.
Oh.
Let's face it, a lot of hip-hop and rap music is built around me showing how I got more money than you, I can disrespect you, and you can't do nothing about it. And ironically, that actually shows the vulnerability that you feel. If you are very confident about your sexuality, you don't have to have 8 women around you twerking.
Interesting, right, Hannah?
That is an interesting thing to say.
Yeah, well, I spoke with Ivan Garcia, and he's a high school sophomore and student activist from Oakland, and he shared his own thoughts on what President Obama said about masculinity.
Looking back on it now, it really does make me emotional because it really was an answer that reinforced this idea that not all men fit this one box and are confined to this one stereotype of how we should be. And it was just really powerful coming from a former president.
Oh, Ivan. Okay. So, you know, it feels like a lot of these young boys, like, this is President Obama. So you listen to him and he looks like you. He's had some experiences mm-hmm. like you. That's cool for these young men.
It was cool. And they seemed very inspired. You know, it's interesting, Hannah, after that interview with Ivan, we wrapped up the interview. We were outside. Mm. And then all of a sudden, all of these police officers in bomb squad vests ran out of the venue, jumped into a Black SUV, and sped off. So you never know what's going to happen when the president is in town. Just so you know.
All right. Well, welcome back, Janae.
Yeah, I don't see how they do it in D.C., but okay. Yeah.
Well, now you saw. Thanks, Janae.
Thank you.
That was KLW's East Oakland reporter, Janae Darden. You can watch videos from the My Brother's Keeper event. We'll show you how. Go to KALW.org.
You're listening to Cross Currents from KELW News. I'm Hannah Baba. And now let's turn once again to stories that you told us you wanted to hear. KELW's Hey Area Project asks you to send us questions, and we send out our reporters to go find the answers. For this series, the reporters are all fellows in our Audio Academy training program. First up, listener Alexandra Rodriguez. She wanted to know this.
Does San Francisco sink? Or is it the whole Bay Area?
KELW's Lisa Wang went out to find the answer.
Spinnaker Way at Cesar Chavez Park in Berkeley is a bumpy and undulating road. That's because it's sinking. Before it started sinking,
they built it straight and flat.
That's Roland Bergman. He's a professor in the Earth and Planetary Sciences Department at UC Berkeley. For someone with this title, I imagine meeting a Bill Nye type. But Roland rode in with a casual hoodie on and a gold hoop in his ear. Together, we're standing on top of sinking land. And we can also see more sinking land. If you look across the bay,
you can see Treasure Island. The northwest corner of Treasure Island is going down especially fast.
Parts of South San Francisco, Alameda, and Foster City, places built on top of landfill or mud, like Treasure Island or the park Roland and I are standing in, are also sinking.
And this used to be a big dump, a real landfill, so there's a lot of trash in there.
And as the land sinks, in some places as much as half an inch per year, the sea level around the bay is also rising at about a tenth of an inch per year. In these areas where the water is rising and the land is sinking, it's possible that one day
they will not any longer be places you can walk on.
One thing we can do is reduce the amount of water we pump from the ground for things like drinking water, because pumping out the groundwater only makes the land sink faster. And if we don't, Roland says in 50 years, many places in the Bay Area are going to be underwater. In Berkeley, I'm Lisa Wang for Hey Area.
All right, thanks, Lisa. So let's hear another one. This one came from listener Montserrat Gonzalez, who wanted to know, who are the most influential Latinos in the Bay Area? KELW's Porfirio Rangel has the answer for that one.
Well, if we're up to me, I'd say Carlos Santana. His music is fun to dance to, but I felt like I needed a more sophisticated answer. So I went back to school to meet with my former professor, Jason Ferreira. He's the chair of the Department of Race and Resistance Studies at SF State.
I'm going to say Eric Quesada.
Professor Ferreira told me Quesada was an activist for housing and immigration rights in the Mission District. He helped create the Mission Anti-Displacement Coalition in the late 1990s.
He was also the executive director of Dolores Street Community Services in the Mission District, providing housing to homeless and the real vulnerable in the community.
Quesada was diagnosed with cancer in 2004, but continued his work as an activist. In 2008, he decided to run for the San Francisco Board of Supervisors for District 9. Here he is, campaigning.
I fought and I fight to preserve and expand all that's right, but at risk in our district.
Quesada lost that race. He continued to stand up for economic and social justice, but by 2011, the cancer took his life. He was just 45 years old. Professor Ferreira says he remains an influence.
One thing to take away from the example of Eric Quesada and the things that he dedicated his life to is to recognize that power actually lies amongst the grassroots.
In San Francisco, I'm Porfirio Rangel for Hey Area.
Thank you, Porfirio, and good question, Montserrat. So good, in fact, we decided to answer another one you posed. Here it is.
Where are the Diego Rivera murals in San Francisco?
KELW's Sarah Nora Coast found the answer.
San Francisco has three murals by Diego Rivera. The first mural he painted outside of Mexico is at the City Club. Then there's the Pan American Unity located at City College. I went with Montserrat to San Francisco Art Institute, or SFAI, where you can see the mural called The Making of a Fresco, showing the building of a city.
The reds and the blues are so vivid that it really makes it feel like it could come to life at any moment.
The mural features the people that are involved in the building process, from general laborers to engineers. But why did Rivera paint murals in San Francisco?
Ray Boynton, who is teaching mural painting at the school starting in the 1920s, and went down, I think, about 1927 or so to Mexico.
This is Gordon Knox. He's the president of SFAI. He says after studying with Rivera, Boynton convinced local leaders that San Francisco needed a Rivera mural. And this piece turned out to convey a powerful message.
About the working people who make the city. The bulk of it is really built, made, and put forward by the working class.
These values are important to Montserrat and her family too. So visiting the gallery makes her quite emotional.
Hard work represented with dignity and pride in art is something that isn't seen often, and I think it's really important. And I love that it's here and accessible for us.
The free murals are all accessible for you too. In San Francisco, I'm Sarah Noah Coast for Hey Area.
Sarah is an intern from Denmark who's been working with us for the last half a year. And today is her last day in our newsroom. Thank you for everything you've done, Sarah. We will miss you. So as I mentioned earlier, all those stories were reported by our trainees. And in fact, we're currently accepting applications for our summer journalism training program. We're looking for folks ready to hit the ground running, telling radio stories about the Bay Area. If this sounds like you or someone you know, check out our application information on the front page at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hannah Baba. In that last story, we got a quick glimpse at some of artist Diego Rivera's work around San Francisco. Well, one of the trainees from our summer program last year wanted to learn more. So he dropped into the Diego Rivera Theater on the Ocean campus of the City College of San Francisco.
Hey, Vicky.
That's reporter Nicholas Harder meeting up with Vicky Sims. She's an art history student at CCSF, and she's also a docent for the massive and famous mural that decorates the theater's entrance hall. Nicholas found that Vicky's story is practically as interesting as the artwork itself.
Vicky Sims and I are standing in front of Diego Rivera's largest mural. As one of the founders of the Mexican muralism movement, he made some big ones. The Pan American Unity mural is as long as a blue whale and taller than a double-decker bus. It was painted on 10 steel and concrete portable panels which weigh thousands of pounds each. When assembled together like they are inside this theater, the entire mural weighs 23 tons. That is one humongous watercolor. Before we get into the making and the history of this legendary mural, let me introduce you to Vicky.
I'm Vicky Sims, and I'm older than 50. I'm back at school. I already have 2 degrees. I have a degree, BA, and I have a master's.
Vicky's kind of like your cool grandma. She likes to wear colorful shawls made of dainty fabric, and younger students will drop by the theater just to chat and invite her out for drinks. She told me she only started thinking about her age recently, when one day she got on the bus and people started getting up to give her a seat.
They think you might get tired before you get off. You know, there's been a shift.
Vicky spent most of her life in the business world. Looking back, she says she was
a corporate robot. You're cut off from everything in some way. You don't know it when you're working because you enjoy your expense account and all those various things.
But as her business career progressed, Vicky increasingly felt like there was this gap in her knowledge of the world, a void in her life begging to be filled.
As I worked, I was always trying to fulfill it by always going to art museums. As I went on my business trips, I was always find the museum and I'd go.
Almost 10 years ago, a close family member took ill, and Vicky had to go down in hours at her business job to become a caregiver. Needless to say, it was a difficult time.
So I decided, well, let me take one class to keep my sanity. And to be honest with you, I'd only planned to take one or two classes and then get back to my life. And what happened is I actually liked art history.
And as it turned out, the school was looking to restart the docent program for the famous Diego Rivera mural here on campus. Vicky was recommended by her professor, and now she's paid to be here 3 days a week to give tours of the mural. Vicky also works as a guide at the MoMA, the Modern Art Museum downtown. They don't pay as much as their old jobs, but Vicky doesn't mind.
Every day I feel that this is what I'm supposed to be doing, and every day is validation.
Now we turn our attention to the mural. Diego and his assistants live painted it in a frigid airplane hangar on Treasure Island for the World's Fair in 1940.
He would be the star attraction, and people could come in and watch him paint. It's a mural of dualities. At the very top, you have the ancient world. And over here, you have modernity, the modern world.
The left side of the mural is dominated by the history of pre-20th century America. And no, I don't mean the United States of America. I mean all of the Americas.
See my little dot?
Yeah, you got the laser pointer?
Yeah.
In the top left panel, you see the ancient yet strangely futuristic city of Tenochtitlan. That's old Mexico City. Its buildings are organized in neat little squares with straight roads all leading to a decorated pyramid in the center. And in the bottom panel, the foreground,
we have this European America's factory over here, right? Mm-hmm. And they looks like they're manufacturing on a workbench that's literally like a log chopped in half. They're manufacturing gold jewelry.
Yes, yes. And that assembly line also makes a statement that the idea of assembly line is also ancient. Like Ford, he didn't invent the assembly line, but he improved it.
The right side of the mural represents modernity. You can see tractors plowing over fields, a lake-sized pit of gouged-out earth, that's the beginnings of Shasta Dam, and lumberjacks chopping down comically huge redwoods. A conveyor belt winds through it all, filled with chunks of rock and gold flecks. And in the foreground, inventors like Ford sit surrounded by models of their creations.
There is a factory line in this corresponding far-right panel,
yes,
but it's in the background. It's a little piece of the panel, and you see the factory line. And what's much more important in this panel seems to be the inventors in the front.
Yes, so very well put. Keep talking. So what we have here, if you look closely, there's someone who can't keep up with production. And also, take another look, they're all working side by side, and they're kind of roboticized. So next, jumping across, that's Thomas Edison, and this black thing that you're seeing, that's your precursor to your iTunes. That's the first phonograph. And so he invented...
It's like a cone sticking out of something.
And so next to that, the guy scratching his head, that's a Mason symbol. I'm a master Mason. And that is Samuel Morse, who invented the Morse code. You see that little dot there? That's the precursor to your text messaging. And he's holding a tape.
As you may have noticed, Vicky is an excellent listener. Throughout the tour, she seems just as eager to hear my thoughts as she is to share her seemingly endless knowledge. It makes her a joy to be around, quite frankly, so I tell her.
Can I just say, Vicky, that I really appreciate how supportive you are. It's awesome. Makes me feel very smart all the time.
You are smart, and you really actually...
We make our way to the center panel, what Vicky refers to as the marriage chamber.
The marriage of artistic expression is between the cathedral of industry and the deity. And this is the deity, the Coatlicue.
The Coatlicue is the primordial earth goddess, an Aztec deity who gave birth to the sun, moon, and stars. The two center panels are dominated by Diego's version of the Coatlicue. Half Aztec totem, half machine, it's a jumble of jade, teeth, cogs, and pistons jammed together to create a monstrous cyborg as tall as the mural itself.
The deity is a steel machine, and it's a part of a factory. And in order to make steel, what do you need? Iron ore that comes from the gut of the earth. So you have the syncretism of the machine and the deity. Now, why does he want to get married.
It's funny to hear Vicky expound upon the deity of industry morphing with the primordial earth goddess. Until recently, she herself was just another cog in the machine. And now, she is still partly living off the money she made during her business career. Financially, she doesn't know exactly how she's going to sustain herself with an art history degree. But the more time I spend with Vicky, the more I understand why she doesn't worry about the money stuff.
Some things really aren't that important. They really aren't. And I don't know whether it's because I'm in not in the corporate world, but I'm in this new world where all of the history and all of the people and how they lived and what they did is more important to me than selling a product. But I still want to work.
And work she does. Vicky has a passion for art history. She wants to inspire her visitors to express themselves by interpreting the art in their own words. In her field, all perspectives are valuable, regardless of age or experience. Come and visit, and she's just as likely to learn something from you as you are from her. From the Diego Rivera Theater on the Ocean Campus of the City College of San Francisco, I'm Nicholas Harder for Cross Currents.
If you'd like to check out Diego Rivera's Pan-American Unity mural, the Diego Rivera Theater is open every day except Sunday from 10 to 4. Find more information at kalw.org. Nicholas originally made that story for the City College's radio station KCSF, and you can hear a longer version on his podcast. It's called The 38. And while you're podcasting, make sure to subscribe to ours. You can do it at kalw.org and click Cross Currents. Today's Cross Currents team includes Kristen McCandless, True Gwynn, Marissa Ortega Welch, and Eli Wertschafter. Our engineers are James Rollins, Tariq Foda, and Gabe Graben. Content manager is Shirin Adil. Our managing editor is David Boyer. Deputy news director is Angela Johnston. News director is Ben Trefney. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. For Cross Currents, I'm Hannah Baba.